Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 561. It's the 17th of August, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Paddy Thompson, sales director of Inspirit Energy. INSP is ticker. We discussed lots of things, including their recent collaboration agreement with the Chartered Institution of Building Services Engineers, or CIBSE. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about purple bricks. And of course, as always, I've got the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. This is an important sort of gauge of sentiment in the AIM market here. And there is a new number one. It's not been in the top five before. And I'm seeing it's got a bit of noise there, and it's a very interesting company. So I'll read that out in a bit. Also, one for your watch list, suggested by Gary, is Gable Holdings, GAH. And I'll read out the reasons for that in a few minutes.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paddy Thompson, sales director of Inspirit Energy, INSP ticker. Paddy, thank you for coming back on.
Justin, good morning. Nice to be back on the podcast again.
Yeah, well, it's always good to have you back on. And listen, I mean, people may not have heard the last podcast, so we're talking here like everyone knows here. So if you could do me a favour, Paddy, if you could sum up what Inspirit Energy is all about, please, for new listeners or for people who will listen to the podcast regularly but haven't heard of Inspirit.
Yeah, of course. Inspirit is a technology development company. We're dedicated to the development and commercialisation of effectively an electricity-generating boiler. We call it micro-combined heat and power. That's quite a long name for a lot of people. So the best way to think about it is a boiler which produces heat but also produces electricity at the same time for use in businesses primarily, and we're also looking at the domestic market as well in the future.
Okay, and what's the advantage in this system, in this kind of boiler, Paddy?
Very simply, you get lower carbon energy and lower cost energy. Obviously, for most people, the lower cost is more important than the lower carbon, but we recognize that both are very important, and we're very much aware of our responsibilities within the Climate Change Act and also the movement towards 2050 low carbon energy. As well as that, we believe there is a distinct benefit to being local, because it means we use the electricity network less, which puts less strain on that. And especially with the development of things like electric vehicles and heat pumps and so forth, the stress on the electricity grid is growing. So anything which reduces that is beneficial to the system, as well as producing lower cost energy for our customers.
I see. And at what stage are you in of development here?
We are in the stage where we are pre-launch, i.e. we're getting ourselves ready for a pre-production field trial. And after that pre-production field trial, we'll be then starting to launch the product and make it available for people, and people then can start to buy it, and we'll start to be selling it to initially commercial customers, although obviously domestic customers can also buy if they want to. The focus on commercial customers is that the returns are much better for them. They use a lot more energy, and their demands are much higher, and therefore they use the product a lot more than a domestic customer would do.
Yeah, and this commercial launch, do you have a date yet? I mean, obviously when you're trialing, you can't set anything in stone because you have to work out how the tests are going. But do you have a ballpark time of when this will be commercially launched?
Yes, of course. As you say, it's always a little bit frustrating when you're launching something, in the sense that it's very difficult to be firm about dates until you're very close to the time. We expect to be having the product available for sale next year. That's 2017. In the meantime, we're getting together our e-commerce website, and that's under development at the moment. When that's available, then we'll be able to reserve units in advance so they can get first in the queue.
Yeah, well, you have a very interesting RNS yesterday. Before we get to that, so, I mean, the market for this, I mean, do you have any idea of, obviously you must have ideas of size of the market, and where are you targeting? Are you targeting just the UK primarily, or just Europe, or what?
I think it's important to understand that what we're doing here is what we like to call next generation boiler. Well, years ago, the world moved from traditional boilers to what's called condensing boilers because they were more efficient. It was mandated by government in the end because it was good for the environment and good for the economy. What we're seeing here with microcombined heat and power, or heat and power boilers, if you like, is a fundamental move from condensing to the next generation. So we expected this to be something which changes everyone's boiler, both commercial and domestic, everywhere, over time. It will take time, but we see ourselves at the vanguard of that change. Therefore, the market for this is, well, it's tens of millions in the UK and more in Europe and the Northern Hemisphere generally, places like Japan and the US, very large. In Japan, they've already sold, I think it's 100,000 plus of these types of units, very much for the Japanese market, those ones, which is very specific. But for the UK market, our unit is British designed and British made.
Yeah, okay. So yesterday's RNS was a collaboration agreement with the Chartered Institution of Building Services Engineers. Why is it significant, Paddy? And take us through it.
Yes, okay. So the Chartered Institute of Building Services Engineers, or CIBSE for short, people often refer to it as CIBSE, they are the organisation which provides the guidance and the codes for everyone who is designing and running plant rooms, commercial plant rooms, in buildings around the country. And actually, they've got 20,000 members in 98 countries around the world. Obviously, the UK is the most important amongst that. What it means is for our approach to the commercial market, everyone who is putting in new plant into commercial plant rooms, so kind of those little forgotten corners of buildings, which most people don't even think about, but that's where the interesting stuff happens from an energy point of view. All of those, they're members of CIBSE, or if they're not, they should be. And CIBSE provides the guidance. So when someone says, well, what should I put in here? Should I look at combined heat and power? What should I just put in here? They look to CIBSE for the guidance. So working with CIBSE is a way to make sure that the guidance that is produced is relevant for micro-combined heat and power. They already have guidance for larger scale combined heat and power, but they recognise that micro-combined heat and power is a different area and one which needs separate guidance as well.
Okay, and so another thing that's quite significant, I suppose, well, we saw recently the abolition of the Department of Energy and Climate Change. So how will this affect you and peers and the industry as a whole?
Yeah, I think this is very much related to what we're doing with CIBSE and the fact that this is very much about the industry moving forwards. Customers are going to need to have options whenever they buy anything, and we recognise that. It'd be great if people have confidence in us and in the industry in general. Through our collaborations, we write CIBSE, and also in certain things, areas where we need to work together, as well as being competitors in terms of selling product, we need to work together in other areas. What happens with DEC and its abolition in favour of being absorbed into BIS, now called BEIS, and I remember when it was called the DTI, and the names have changed, I don't think the people change behind it. With all of those changes, it becomes more and more difficult for the industry to have confidence that the people we're dealing with understand this industry and how it's developing. Currently, we have a feed-in tariff consultation, which we've announced previously, which is ongoing. We hope, particularly post-Brexit, and the idea that we need to stimulate the economy a bit more, that the government will take this opportunity to continue to support our industry, even perhaps even expand that would be great, but to support our industry, which will give customers confidence, and with that confidence will allow us to sell product, get product out there, get it into the market, and help to trigger this change, this new generation of boilers, this new generation of heat and power through the market. Government support is very useful for pump priming markets and for catalysing things. It's by no means a crutch to live on, and the current arrangement we have, which is what's been consulted on, is not by no means a crutch. It's certainly just a pump priming exercise, and we hope that the government won't row away from that, particularly given this the post-Brexit industry we live in now.
Okay, and you know, as an industry, as a body there, you know, as a company, are you feeling confident that this change, that they look upon you favourably?
I think everyone at the moment is living in a time of uncertainty. I don't think there's anyone who really knows what government's doing. I'm not even sure. Well, I think certainly some politicians would say that even the government doesn't know what it's doing at the moment. But whatever the case there, I think there is an opportunity for us to say to government, this is what's required, this is what's needed. There is an inquiry going on at the moment about which parts of the it comes from the EU to certain parts of that industry, which needs to be retained. We're participating in that, as we should be doing. We're participating with CIBSE, as is good. And what that will do for us in terms of CIBSE, it means that when their members look at putting a new product, when they're thinking, should I put in a standard boil or do something a bit innovative here, they will know that we're the ones who've been working with CIBSE most closely, and therefore they can have absolute confidence that our equipment will be in line with what CIBSE is saying in terms of their guidelines.
Okay, Paddy, listen, so I'm listening to this. I'm not an investor in Inspirit Energy, and I'm thinking, you know, it sounds interesting. It's a cutting-edge technology here that could be big in the future. So give me three reasons, as a non-invested person here, why I should add Inspirit Energy to the Vox Markets watchlist. That way, if they do add you, they'll get your RNSs whenever you send them out. So give us three bullet points, please, Paddy, if you could.
Okay. First up, this is all about the next generation of boilers, after condensing boilers. It's a massive worldwide market. We're talking about tens of millions of points. Everywhere there's a gas connection, there's an opportunity to install one of these. So there's a massive market. That's point one. Point two, within that market, in our class, we have the lowest, what we call levelized cost of electricity. So over its lifetime, the cost of electricity generated from one of our boilers is the lowest of all the other micro-CHP boilers. Those are our numbers. Part of what we're doing with CIBSE will help to validate that. And as far as Inspirit is concerned, we are positioned to open up the smaller commercial market through initiatives such as the collaboration with CIBSE, but also in terms of just where we're focused with our technology, how it works, and that small commercial market hasn't been approached yet by traditional CHP, which doesn't work in that market. It's only really us. So we have a market to aim at, which is effectively a virgin market, but it was something which is very much recognisable in terms of existing technology.
Marvellous. Paddy, thank you for coming on. And listen, do come back on. We have further news so we can share with our listeners.
Many thanks, Justin. I look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brand Communications, Alan Green. You're Al.
Hello, Just. Yeah, I'm very good. Thanks, mate. And talking to you on this new headset, which is crystal clear. Wonderful.
All right, nice. Yeah, you can get some good kit these days, just Amazon or whatever, for relatively cheap, can you?
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? Just show us how quickly things work. You Skype me that link to Amazon, clicked it, opened the account, ordered it, knock on the door the next morning, there it was.
Yeah, it's almost like they're sitting outside waiting for you to order something.
It really is.
Where did you come from? I did that on Saturday. I wanted something delivered, and I ordered something on Saturday. Sunday, it was here, and I was on a Sunday. Do you remember years ago, like with postal services and all that, you wouldn't get it for weeks or whatever? Yeah. But it's amazing these days, and you can see why Amazon are taking everyone apart, because it's their mission to get something to you as almost as soon as you can get it, and it's amazing service, I think. And that's, the drones haven't even started yet. You wait till the drones start going.
Well, that's the thing, the drone delivery service, and once that starts, they're moving to fresh food. I think Ocado and the others are fairly comfortable with their own offering, but I think it's going to turn everything upside down, because Amazon is so good, the logistics system is so good. Imagine ordering you'll order a takeaway from Just Eat, and you'll be traveling, say, to a football match, and the drone will probably meet you at the football match with your takeaway. That's how it could work. It's quite astonishing, isn't it?
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if you hadn't ordered one, but you're hungry, and just one just delivered one to you by accident, the wrong person. Yeah, I'll have this. Marvellous. Yeah, lovely.
I'm sitting in the Amex Stadium in Brighton. My seat number is J37, and the little drone flies in during the game, drops the takeaway in your lap. That's a little far-fetched, I guess, but that's where we're moving towards, though, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah.
quite astonishing.
It'll be interesting to see. I suppose we're seeing the share price pressure already for, you know, on Tesco's, bit like that, who deliver, you know, because when Amazon, I know it sounds odd at the moment, Amazon doing food, but we'll soon get over that factor, and they will be doing it, you know, sooner rather than later, well, as fast as they can,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah.
Right, cool, Al. So what are you looking at today? What's happening?
Well, continuing the theme of disruptive technologies, I've taken a look at a company that floated in December last year, a company called Purple Bricks. And of course, they'll be best known for those incredibly annoying TV ads with those two silly guys. But nonetheless, I thought, well, this is a good company. It's offering a disruptive technology for the property industry, which has traditionally been through estate agents and letting agents, and of course more recently you've had the emergence of On the Move and Rightmove and all the other property websites for lettings and for house sales. And Purple Bricks have just got that. It's almost like I guess if we go back a few years and we launched Share Crazy online share dealing at £9 per trade flat fee, you know, they've gone in to the property market and said, right, this is the flat fee, sell your house anywhere in the UK, £7.98 plus VAT, in London, £11.58 plus VAT, flat fee, that's it. And they charge extra for insurance, for viewings, for energy certificates and so on, but basically that's it. What you see is what you get, which I think is refreshing. They progress pretty rapidly. I mean, they're trading on a fairly racy valuation, 70 times earnings versus the for traditional estate agents somewhere around 9 times earnings. But a lot of the brokers that are covering the stock are very positive on the potential for the industry, for the company, given that the industry really. You could probably call the industry complacent for the past 5-10 years, and areas where Rightmove and On the Move or On the Market have developed traditional offerings probably haven't taken it far enough. And I think Purple Bricks are really the next stage in this. So we've had Just Eat for the takeaway food market. We've now got Purple Bricks for the for the property market. They also generate revenues from lettings. They have a sliding scale fee structure for that. They sell insurance products and everything else as well. But their core offering, I think, it's a really clear to understand vanilla offering. Now the company's currently worth £320 million, floated at a pound. It's dipped as low as 72p, been as high as £1.80. It's currently at 130p, so it's still quite highly rated. But a basket of brokers are taking a number of views on this. Jefferies reckons that on its own discounted cash flow basis, the broker Jefferies reckons the shares are worth currently 94p, but concedes that the growth in the company could accelerate faster than it currently believes it will. And if that happens, then it's due re-rating. Other brokers are much more bullish. Peel Hunt has reiterated a buy target and raised its buy target price to £3. Cantor are covering it with a 220p price target. So there's a consensus there from those three of just over £2 price target. And again, we've seen what Just Eat have done. We've seen what ASOS have done previously. If Purple Growth manages to do the same for the property industry that, that Just Eat's done for takeaway food and ASOS for food for online food sales, then, you know, currently the shares could offer pretty good value. Speculative, yes. Disruptive technology, yes. But, you know, I think this company is going places, even though they still have that really annoying TV ad.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I quite like those guys, and I thought, I mean, they're obviously actors, but for a while I thought, are these the guys that run Purple Bricks? I quite like them. You know, they're quite, you know, but I'm just looking, and I was quite interested to see, I've just looked at their final results, and revenue for the year, 18.6 million, which is up 448%.
Yeah,
and gross profit 10.6, but the gross profit margin is 56%, which is in line with, like, you know, like I said, Rightmove and all that. But I was interested to see, because, like I said, we have all seen those adverts. I was thinking they've got to be spending a pretty penny to get those cutting through to us, which they are. First and foremost, you can buy the ad space, you know, on TVs and everything. It costs money, but it also has to, you know, get a bit of traction. And those guys do get traction.
Oh, they looking, do, for sure.
Yeah, but their sales and marketing costs $12.9 million, and you know, on a revenue of $18.6 million, it's quite high. But they've got to keep grabbing attention, haven't they? When you are cutting edge like that, you've got to keep, you know, almost land grabbing as fast and aggressively as you can. And so I don't know, you know, what they're planning to do there. I mean, they've just seen there at the top, they plan to launch in Australia as well.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that they'll keep having to be aggressive spending on that sales. And I wonder how long they'll have to keep going for before they become a permanent fixture. And before people, you know, it's almost like second nature for people to approach Pearl Bricks first before traditional, you know, letting agencies. Or but they're heading in the right direction. It's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, it's worth keeping an eye on because there could be, you know, the next market leader like Rightmove did, you know, and you never know.
Yeah, and going back to marketing. Costs the amount of money that Coovs, of course, we spoke about Coovs the other week, the amount of money they're spending in India, and of course it's a big chunk of their turnover. But of course this is an internet based operation. They don't have the overheads of traditional estate agents with outlets all over the place. They are an online offering, so in that regard they can justify that sort of spend. And if they continue to grow at the sort of levels that we saw just now, you know, with their revenues up 440%, they also said with the results that the strong momentum had continued into the second half of the year too. So that's a really strong statement to make. I think it is speculative. It's disruptive technology, but I think look at what's happened in other areas. It's certainly the time is certainly ripe for a company to come along and do that. And Purple Bricks might just be their company.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the chart here. You can see it did spike, you know, almost at 180 went up from, that's a phenomenal rise, isn't it? From one pound, it went down, it dropped down to, like you said, 72 pence. Mm. You know, still got them there. Because people, I suppose, weren't sure how they're going. And when was that? Back in...
That was back in March, April, wasn't it? So...
Yeah. So... Oh, anyway, the 21st of... so they dipped down to on the 21st of January there.
Yep.
Sorry, they went down to 72 pence. They went all the way back up then at 180.
Yeah.
They've come back a bit now, and you see them sort of this wedge formation at around almost like 130 level, 120, 130. So it seems like it could be a good, you know, in a buy zone. If you get a 120, you think it wouldn't go a lot lower, maybe. But you never know. But anyway,
well, I think any just from here. I mean, we've seen consolidation between sort of 120 and 140 really since middle of May, haven't we? So you know, that's a good period of steady performance. We've had the results. The strong momentum's continued into the second half of the year. So when we get the next set of interims and or trading statement, then clearly we'll have a better indicator. But certainly, I think it's got over the initial IPO euphoria where you know sellers stag the float or jump out shortly after, and then it dips down and of course it's come back in again. So anyone investors that got in sort of, as you say, in January at about sort of 70-80p have done very well indeed and look set to do well. Plus there is a very small yield from the company as well, so you know that's going forward, that's an area that could grow too once they start returning money to shareholders.
Well, Alan, you've convinced me. I've just hit follow on their page on Vox Market, so I will now get RNSs straight to the front screen of my smartphone whenever they release one. So, marvellous. Perp. Thanks so much, Al.
Cheers, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. They are at five, down from four, Prospects Oil and Gas, BXOG. At four, it's Highland Natural Resources, a new entry there. At three, down from number one, Harvest Minerals, HMI. At two, new entry, Avoca Gold, OBG. And I think it's been previously suggested as one for your watch list. And at number one, brand new number one, I've seen a bit of noise about this on Vox and on Twitter, and it's Cambridge Cognition Holdings, COG. And I for one, am going to add that and check it out and do some research on that, because I read a little bit about it this morning. But not enough. So this is ideal. Listen, any of these companies hit number one, I think you should just hit follow, you know, and read about them, doing some research on them, because it's worth. Because obviously sentiment are with them. That's a powerful sort of force on AIM. All right, one for your watch list today, suggested by Gary Newton, and it's Gable Holdings, GAH. What does the company do? It's a European non-life insurer. How many shares does the company have in issue? 135 million. What's the current price and market cap? 3.25 pence. Market cap, 4.4 million market cap. Revenue, profit, loss does the company generate? 18 million in revenue in 2015 with a small loss. I did look this up, and the loss actually is profit loss from operations before taxation is 24.2 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? Cash and investments value at 74.5 million. I've also added this bit there from the final results. Cash and liquid investment balances have increased by over 45% in the financial year and were 61.6 million as of the year end. But cash and investment value is 74.5, as Gary said there. So three reasons why we should add this to our watch list. Number one, cash plus investment value of 74.5 million versus market cap 4 million. Number two, price to fail. Once restructured to comply with Solvency II, back to 50 pence highs of early 2015. Well, we'll see. And number three, they've stated they can't align to Solvency II. If they can't align to Solvency II, they will sell the company, which at 50% discount to cash and investments is still 25 pence. That's a good point there. So that's GAH, that's Gable Holdings. Gary, thank you very much for submitting that. It's a very interesting story there. Like I said, do your own research on every company mentioned on this podcast. Nothing you hear is advice to invest. It's all about ideas, all right? So some ideas are good, some ideas are bad. Some ideas are very good, some ideas are very bad. So check that out there. Gable Holdings, GAH. By all means, you keep this little feature alive. So if you know of a stock that we should add to our watch list, please go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click the link from one of my blogs there. You'll see a link. Fill in the form. It takes 5 minutes and it will be on the podcast. By the way, it looks like next week, already on the website, we have like and dislike icons, buttons for RNSs in the morning, whenever they're released, actually. At the top, that's only on the website, though, on the mobile version. On the app, if you have the Vox Markets app, worth getting. It's a free, valuable, invaluable, priceless resource. I just downloaded it from voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. But next week, hopefully, on the app, we'll have the like and dislike buttons. And please do hit a like or dislike for an RNS that you feel strongly about, because I will be featuring this on the podcast. Most liked or disliked news releases, RNSs, by the day on the podcast. So please do that. Help me out. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.